सहनाभवतु सहनाभुनक्तु सहवीर्यङ्करवापहै तेजस्विनापतितमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः 146 विवेकेन परिक्लिश्यन् औपभोगेन तृप्यति अन्यथानन्तभोगेऽपि नैव तृप्यति कर्हि चित् नैव तृप्यति कर्हि चित् विवेकेन परिक्लिश्यन् औपभोगेन तृप्यति अन्यथा अन्तभोगेऽपि न एव तृप्यति कर्हि चित्. Remember that in the last verse he was saying the klesha or the agitation or distress here when they're talking about a jivan mukta, about a jnani, it is not at all the same. it's funny. The klesha, when they're talking about the samsara tapa, you know, that's kind of the agitation or the heat of samsara, that type of klesha. That's not the samsara, that's not the klesha of a jnani. The klesha of the jnani is virakta, is the dispassion itself. Because there's no real pull, because of your knowledge, to get involved in samsara. Because you know all of the problems that are attached to that type of involvement. So that's the klesha that's born of vairagya. And he says, whereas for the samsara, that tapaha, that agitation is born of bhranti jnanam, mitya jnanam, just an erroneous knowledge. That erroneous knowledge where I think that my ananda, I believe, my conclusion, my nishta, you know, my firm conclusion is that my ananda, my well-being is dependent upon the world, fulfilling this desire or that desire, changing this, changing that. That actually my experience of fullness is dependent upon how things go out here. Right? And so that is very, very stressful. It's very stressful because I don't have control of this world. I'm just one individual in the world. It's out of your hands. You can do just so much, right? But you can't guarantee. I mean, if we could guarantee that I could fulfill my desires, whatever it might be, that's Swargaloka. That's heaven. What they call is a heaven world. We don't have that type of situation here, where I know that I can achieve those things that I believe would make me happy and then keep them, all of that. So that causes, that's what we call samsara tapa. All the stress around that, about trying to procure the things that will make me happy and then protect them. The jnani doesn't have that samsara tapa because the source of ananda is no longer projected onto the world. And so now when your prarabdha, the prarabdha karma, as we'll see, is coming up, the prarabdha karma puts you in situations or makes these certain desires rise in your mind as part of the very prarabdha karma, then you have to go with that, right? And that has its own stressfulness attached to it. And so that's the type, that because of the vairagya, that's the type of klesha that we're looking at here. So now he says, this is something kind of interesting. He says, vivekena pariklishan alpabhogena tripyati. Talking about the jnani, he says, the jnani is tripyati. He's satisfied, he or she is satisfied, tripyati, with alpabhogena. Even with a little enjoyments, just the small enjoyments that come your way. You know, vivekena pariklishan. Having vairagya, being completely aware of the situation of samsara. Pariklesha means that vairagya is all around, 360 degrees. You know, so 360 degree vision of understanding kind of the pitfalls of getting too attached to any given object in samsara. Getting too attached to anything being a particular way in samsara has so many pitfalls. So he says, vivekena. Because of that discrimination, because of that knowledge, recognizing that, just the small little enjoyments that come your way, a jnani is satisfied with that. Just with little niceties, whatever sweet little things come your way, and you feel a little pleasure from that, that's fine. That's it. You don't ask for anything more. That is tripti. That gives you a lot of satisfaction. But he says, anyata, otherwise, say that viveka is not there. He says, ananta bhogaha api, even with limitless enjoyment. Ananta means without end. Even with limitless enjoyment, naiva tripyati karahichit, there is never any satisfaction. Saying, for the samsari, for the one who says, my ananda, my fullness, my happiness is based out here, for that person, there is never an end. There are never can be enough enjoyment. Ananta bhoga means the enjoyment is limitless. Your seeking for enjoyment is limitless. They'll never reach any type of satisfaction. Why? Because and in every samsari who becomes a mumukshu, one of the things that a mumukshu who's gone through this transition from samsari to mumukshu, one thing that the mumukshu always is continually recognizing is that all of the little pleasures, the pleasures, the enjoyments, things that you've worked so hard even to achieve, pleasures, enjoyments that you've worked so hard to achieve, they are all so very time-bound. The pleasure, the ananda, the satisfaction from the fulfillment of a desire is so shockingly time-bound. You know, it's not that you don't appreciate, perhaps you've done a lot of work to fulfill a given desire and you fulfill the desire and you get a burst of ananda from the fulfillment of the desire. But that is quick to recede into the background. You still have the object of desire accomplished, but now that is a given. And it so quickly becomes a given. Right? It so quickly becomes a given. And then the search goes on. Now you have that. You have that. And the little burst of ananda that it gave is over. Right? This is if you have it and it's secure, you know. Not to say what happens when that thing that you have becomes threatened, that creates a lot of stress. So that's the samsara tapa. That's the burning of samsara. But say just in the course of life, you fulfill a desire, you have it now, you have the joy of having that, having accomplished it, you're so happy, and then very quickly, within the day usually, within the, you know, if not the moment, you know, it becomes the given and the mind again begins its pattern of seeking. Right? And that I used to feel shocked by that. Shocked with, and kind of, I've also felt some fear as I realized that that was the reality of life. You know, shock, dismay, and some sort of fear, because as you start recognizing that that is the situation, that is the worldly situation, then your mind, as you become a mumukshu, you start realizing, and as you start analyzing the situation, you start realizing there's never a time that this won't be the case. In fact, that's why ananta bhoga, that the enjoyments that you seek for satisfaction are limitless, it's endless, it will never come to an end, because the bhoga the enjoyment is so transitory. So he says, otherwise, if that jnanam, if that viveka is not there, no matter how many, even with limitless bhogas, limitless enjoyments, ananta bhogaha, even when there are limitless enjoyments, na eva tripti parahicha, never is there satisfaction. Right? Only momentary glimpses, momentary experiences. So now, let's see, continues on with this. Najatu kama kamanam, upabhoge na shamyati, upabhoge mishanyati avisha krishna varatmatmeva avisha krishna varatmeva bhuya eva bhivardhati bhivardhate bhuya eva bhivardhate na jatu kamaha kamanam upabhogena shamyati havisha krishna varma eva bhuyaha eva avivarupate. He says najatu, never. Najatu means never. Kamaha kamanam, the kama, the desire for kamas, for desired objects. Kamaha kamanam, the desire for desired objects, the desire for objects of desires, kamaha kamanam, he says, upabhogena shamyati, it is never quelled, is never quenched. Shamyati is never made quiet, never made peaceful by upabhoga, by the enjoyment, right? So he says, you can say like this, another way, this is a better way to say it. The other's okay, but najatu kamaha shamyati, never is desire satisfied or brought to, made quiet. Never is desire made quiet. Kamanam upabhogena, by the enjoyment of desired objects. Right? By the enjoyment of the desires, by the fulfillment, by the enjoyment of the desires, never at any time is the desire itself brought to an end. Shamyati means to bring it to submission, to bring it to peace. So never at any time is desire brought to cessation, made brought to quietude by the upabhoga, by the enjoyment of desires, of the desired objects. Havisha Krishna Vartma Eva. Like fire, Krishna Vartma. Krishna Vartma is a name for fire. Krishna means black. Vartman means path. The one, it's a name for fire, the one whose path is black. Means as it moves through, it leaves black ash as it moves. So Krishna Vartman is a name for fire. There's a lot of different names for fire. Another one is Anala. Alam means satisfied. Anala, the one that is never satisfied. Anala, you know? There's hundreds of, lots of different names for fire. Another one is Agragami, the one that goes upward, right? Because flame always rises up. So that's just, these are different names for fire. So this one that he's using here, Krishna Vartman, it leads a wake in its path, it leads a wake of black. So he says, Krishna Vartma Eva, just like fire, Bhuyaha eva abhivartate, increases very much, goes on increasing with what havish wood offerings. In other words, havish is the ghee that you offer in a ritual. The havish is the offering that you're offering into the fire when you're doing a Vedic ritual. Say you're offering the havish is ghee, which means clarified butter. And as you offer ghee into the fire, it's not the fire that ever will say anala. You'll never say, oh, you'll never say, alam, alam, I have enough. No, anala. It never has enough. In fact, the more you offer, the more it wants. And that will never, ever change. So like that, desire is like that. The more that you offer the psyche, the more that you as the desirer, the more you fulfill your desires, the more you need to fulfill your desires. It will never, it's not like the desired objects will ever allow you to say, oh, it's enough now. The reason is that you are dependent, as an ajnani, as a samsari, you are dependent on bringing shanti to your mind by that momentary fulfillment of a desire, that moment that you fulfill a desire. What happens is that at that moment, and only a moment, your mind is desireless, right? Because your focus had been on the desire, the feeling, the desire, when you fulfill it, the mind gains a shantavritti. Mm. The mind becomes quiet. Mm. When the mind becomes quiet, it is not competing with your own ananda in any way. And in fact, in that shantavritti, like in a clear bucket of water, in a clear, still lake, how the sun shining on it will reverberate and reflect in that lake, giving the lake, as though the sun then is just abiding, reflecting, reverberating in the lake. When your mind gains that shantavritti, because for the moment there is no desire, since you've just fulfilled the desire and the next desire hasn't come, so that moment you want nothing. And so in the depth of that silent mind, it's like a meditative mind now. It's almost like a nirvikalpa samadhi mind. Very meditative mind, silent mind. The ananda of yourself reflects, reverberates in that mind. As opposed to an agitated mind, a stressed mind, you know, a worried mind, a concerned mind, a sorrowful mind, a depressed mind, where the self definitely... Your very swarupa is there present, illumining that mind, but that mind is not in a condition that where itself is reverberating or reflecting the self. When the mind itself is reflecting, is manifesting the self, as though manifesting the very swarupa of the self, that mind experiences its own version, what we call vritti ananda. The ananda as expressed in the vritti. The ananda expressed in a shanta vritti. That's why it's different than the ananda, the swarupananda of your being. The swarupananda of your being is always the same. But the samsari has never differentiated the swarupananda, the ananda, the wholeness, the ever-abiding wholeness of your own nature. It's never differentiated it from the vritti. And so that self doesn't count. It simply doesn't count for an agnani. What counts is the removal of dukkha from the mind. And that removal of dukkha, of sorrow from the mind, is what we call the sukha dukkha, sukha dukkha, sukha dukkha, sukha dukkha. And the only way that I'm removing the dukkha, the sorrow, the despair, the worry, the concern from the mind, is by fulfilling desires. And so by fulfilling desires, I get these momentary shantavrittis. They only last for a little while, because as soon as the shantavritti is there, I enjoy the happiness, but then my mind starts feeling and thinking again. I'm thinking about what else is needed and what I have to do now. And so what happens is the shantavritti goes away. Mm. It isn't even necessarily that I've lost my value for the object that I've just, the desire that I've just fulfilled. I can still have a tremendous love for it. I'm so happy that I fulfilled that desire. I'm so happy that's my reality now, that this thing is part of my life, or this person is part of my life. I'm so grateful for that. But my mind is concerned elsewhere. Right? So since my mind has moved on with its concerns, the ananda that object had momentarily given me is no longer there. Because the mind, even though appreciative, perhaps, of the object, of the person, still appreciative, valuing and all of that, mind has these other things. Life goes on. So now the agitation has come back in the mind. No problem for the jnani. Because the jnani isn't dependent on a shantavritti. For a jnani, whatever vritti is there, shanta vritti, or whether the mind is tired or the mind is engaged in this way or not that way, my attachment is not to the ananda produced in the mind. The attachment is to the swarupananda that is present in every vritti. That's the attachment. That's where the mind revels. The mind revels in the ananda that doesn't come and go. These shanta vrittis are, you know, these are whatever causes them, whatever little thing causes them, those are the little satisfactions. Those are the nice little pleasures that the universe gives you. They're little extras. These little, you know, they're the nice little extras for the jnani. Because the jnani is not dependent on that. So when they're there, that's fine. But for the ajnani, for the samsari, there is total dependence on that. Because I don't know where the source of my ananda is. And so therefore I am searching for those pleasurable experiences in the world. And that means, if I could have that, I will get that ananda. That's what we call the desire template. If I could have that, I'll get that ananda. Actually, I'm getting an illusion, right? Because all I'm getting is, as I fulfill the desire, the mind becomes quiet, the ananda is there, I thank that object for it. That's what's going on. But that is the reality for an ajnani. And so that's how the person is living the life. But because it's illusory, because the only thing that's giving the ananda has nothing to do with the object, it has to do with the shantavritti, there is no way of fulfilling myself. It's not possible. Because the fulfillment of a desire only gives a momentary shanti, right? Because the mind moves on. So then I need another. So that's why he says in this previous verse, ananta bhoga api, even with the enjoyment, limitless bhoga, limitless enjoyments, there will be no satisfaction. Because each enjoyment only gives a momentary pleasure. And so that means you need the next one. Okay, so I'm here. So he says, that's now in this verse that we're doing. So he says that never can desire be quenched by the enjoyment of desire, by the fulfillment of your desires. Never can the desire be quenched. Because it's just like a fire. Which continues to grow bigger and bigger and bigger, the more ghee you give it, the more hummus you give it. Desires are like that. And the problem is, too, just to understand, every time you fulfill a desire, it does work, right? That's part of the problem. You fulfill the desire and it works in that it does give you a moment of happiness and joy and completion and fulfillment. And so then when coming from that ajnana, then you can think, at least until you become a mumukshu and get totally despairing, right? You think, all right, now I did get that, so if I could get this and this and this and in this combination and these type of things, then that fulfillment, that joy would last then. So now if I could just have that, that would make it a little better. And just have that, secure that, make it a little better. And then this ananda that I can say, you know, kritya kritaha, everything that's to be done has been done. You know, kritya kritaha, that which is to be done has been done. Anandoham, I am free, I am whole, I am complete. That's the illusion. Because then there's reason for it. It's not like we're total idiots. It's that when you do fulfill a desire, you do get ananda. And when you fulfill a bigger desire, you get more ananda because it meant more to you. You get more grief and more agitation along the way. But when the desire is fulfilled, the ananda is bigger because your concentration had been so much, the want had been so much, that when it's relieved, it's a bigger release. It's a bigger shantavritti. You know? It's still momentary. So, it just, desire is just like that fire. And it leaves a black trail. Right? It leaves ashes in its wake. That's why he uses that Krishna word. Not everybody knows what he's talking about. Closer, yeah. Closer. Parijnaya yopabhukto hi. Bhogo bhavati tushtiye, bhogo bhavati tushtiye, vijnaya sevitas choraha, vijnaya sevitas choraha, maitri meti cha chorataam, maitri meti na chorataam. Parijnaya upabhuktaha hi, bhogaha bhavati tushtiye, vijnaya sevitaha choraha, maitrin eti achodatam. He says, for one who clearly understands, remember when they say, like, here it says, nyaya, having clearly understood. Parignaya. Nya means to know. When they say pari, it means to know from all sides. Just to have thorough understanding. Pari means all the way around. So parignaya, having thoroughly understood this, the nature of kama, the nature of desire, you know, no illusions about it. Then, upabuktaha hi bhogaha, a desire, a bhoga, an enjoyment, which is upabuktaha, which is being enjoyed. So having clearly and clearly knowing, you understand completely the nature of kama, the nature of yourself, kept that clarity, no problem, thoroughly, cleanly clear to you. Then an enjoyment, a bhoga, that is upabuktaha, a desire that is being enjoyed, bhavati tushtiye, leads to some satisfaction. You get a pleasure. Tushtiye means it's satisfying. You get pleasure from that. So, if you know what's going on. See, this is the example he gives. Why? How is it that you get pleasure? It's like this. Vignaya, for a person who knows clearly, understands, sevita choraha, a thief. Chora is a thief. Who has been sevitaha means you've brought a thief into your friendship or into your to help you with something. Vignaya, knowing full well that the person is a thief, you employ them for some reason, you engage them for something. Sevitaha choraha. So having known completely that the person is a thief, you don't expect anything else from them, you know what they are, who they are. So you are engaged them, having known this. Then knowing maitrim eti nachodatam, then they can become friends. They can become your friend. You see them as a friend, not as a thief. The state of being a thief is not what you're invoking from that person. You're invoking their friendship. Right? Because you don't expect them to be anything other than what they are. Right? So understanding the situation completely with this person, then you're invoking their friendship, not the state of being a thief. So like that, with desire, with the enjoyment of these enjoyable things, you know exactly what they are. You know the momentary nature of the enjoyment. And so you accept that enjoyment for what it is, not expecting or not asking it to be something else. In samsara, when you're enjoying a kama, a desire, you expect something more from it than what it can possibly give you. And you will always be ripped off. you will always be robbed, right, from your enjoyment. Your enjoyment will always be stolen. It will always be taken away. In fact, we even think about this, think in these terms sometimes, like say if you have fulfilled a desire, but then there are others who are wanting that same thing, or others who are encroaching or moving in on that desirable space, stealing it from you, taking it away from you. So that can happen. In fact, the world can become full of thieves, right? Thieves and evildoers. People who are out to get you, right? In reference to your kama. But actually here it's the kama itself, the upabhoga, the kama, the desired object itself is so disappointing. So disappointing. If I expect it to be other than what it is. If I don't, if I have this parijnana, you know, if I clearly understand the nature of desire, the nature of bhoga, the nature of enjoyment, I just enjoy it as it's there, and I'm free to let it go also. That's why that's vairagya. That is vairagya. That's why the helium balloon example is so nice, because you can enjoy it. You know how much in your childhood memories, you know, what it's like to have a helium balloon. And to hold on to it, and all the while you're worried, you know, that you're going to let it go. And you have it tied on your hand or whatever. And then there's always the threat of it deflating, all of these things. And eventually, usually, it does get lost and go up into the sky. And these are all issues from the start. The whole thing is dukkha, from the beginning of the pleasure to the end of it, because of your concerns around it and the eventual loss. But for the adult who as vairagya, the whole thing is just fun. You've been given this helium balloon. It's fun to play with. You enjoy it. And when it slips from your hand, then you also enjoy its travels up into the sky. There's nothing going on with you because vairagya, no attachment, no expectation, no feeling that I must have this helium balloon in order to be happy. In fact, even before you got the helium balloon, while you had the helium balloon, and after it left, you never had any feeling that you required this for your fullness. That's the jnana. That's the parijnaya. That's the parijnaya. Having no completely. And so therefore, when that pleasure, when that fun thing, when that enjoyment is happening, you can totally enjoy it. Because you know fully what it is. And you have no expectations before, during, and after for it to provide you with any more or any less than what it does. That's the vairagya. That's the freedom. And that freedom really allows you to enjoy the little things that life has to offer. The little commas that come your way. Okay? So, it's a nice example. So now, more on this. Manaso nigrihitasya. Manaso nigrihitasya. Lila bhogo upakopiyaha. Lila bhogo upakopiyaha. Tame va labdhavistaram. Klishtatvat bahumanyate. Manasaha nigrahitasya lila bhogaha alpakaha api yaha tameva alabdha vistaram viklishtatvat bahumanyate. For manasaha nigrahitasya, for a mind which is controlled, a mind that you have in your own hands, not a mind that's run wild, a mind that is under your control, you know, in your hands. For such a mind, lila bhogaha yaha, those lila bhogas, lila means sport or play or diversion or pastimes, just enjoyments, you know, diversions, pastimes, and enjoyments like lila, like play. These lila bhogas, these diversions, these enjoyments, this play of enjoyment. Upakaha api, even though very small, these little small little enjoyments, all right, for a controlled mind. Tameva alabdha vistaram. Even though, he says, tameva, klishtatvat, alabdha vistaram means they are very limited. Alabdha vistaram. Alabdha vistaram means, you know, like a huge spread out, like a great big enjoyment would be vistaram. Alabdha means that greatness, bigness of the enjoyment, alabdha, isn't obtained. It's small. It's opaka. That alone is just a small. It's just a small little amount of enjoyment, not something that spreads out all over the place. Just a very limited, a limited enjoyment. The klishta twat, because of the klishta, the vairagya around it, for the jnani, the vairagya, the klishta means you know its limitations, its doshas are very clear to you. So because that of that klishta, klishta means the vairagya, the recognition of all of the doshas, the defects around that, bahumanyate, it seems as though very great, right? These little pleasures, lila bhogas are the little pleasures, even though they're small, for one who has their mind in their under their control, means the mind's not running out, I need to have this, I need to have that. For the jnani, that mind is held. For that person, even though these little lilas, these little enjoyments are small, not extensive at all, they seem like a lot. It seems like a lot. Why? Because you don't ask for anything else. So you just notice the small joys that are coming. You know? Think about like this also. Another way you can look at this. when your mind is not asking the world to be a particular way, means I need this in this sense, I must have this to be happy, I must have this to be happy, I must have this to be happy. All of these conditions, I live a very conditional life, right? I need to arrange everything to make myself happy. That relationship with the world is highly stressful because I'm always juggling too many balls all of the time. So my mind can't relax. But the jnani, if I'm not doing that to the world, if I'm able to relax and enjoy the world as it is, then there's all kinds of these little enjoyments. All of these little leelas are popping up all over the place. Why? Because my mind is shanti. And so I can appreciate Ishwar. I can appreciate all the little things that are happening. And so actually I'm getting lots of little leelas, little leela bogas, little diversions here and little diversions there. Because shantavritti, the only thing that's ever given you ananda, the ananda state in the mind, the type of ananda that can come and go, right? The vritti ananda. The only thing that gives vritti ananda is shanti. That's all. There is no other vritti ananda. And so what gives the shanti vritti for the samsari, the fulfillment of the desire? For the jnani, the fulfillment of desire is not necessary. Because the mind doesn't ask for that anymore. Because it knows the source of ananda is the swarupananda of the self. And so it's not goading the universe to provide. Right? When that's not the case, then all kinds of little pleasures are happening all over the place in daily life. So these little leelas, you know, seem to be so much. You know? In a way, they are so much. They are so much because your mind isn't muddled. Muddled by desires superimposed on the creation. Another way of saying my mind isn't muddled by superimposing the ananda of my being onto the creation and then trying to get it back. It's not there. So for the jnani, the mind is sitting in the ananda, reveling in the ananda, and from that position, dealing with the world as it presents itself to me. Dealing with my prarabdha, engaging in my prarabdha, which is full of sukha and dukkha. The prarabdha itself is full of sukha and dukkha. The prarabdha offered, jnani doesn't all of a sudden become, you know, what do you call it, like vanilla. You know? It's not true. The prarabdha is a combination of sukha and dukkha. That means difficult experiences and pleasurable experiences. It's just your mind doesn't engage in the difficult experiences in the same way. It's not that the difficult experiences aren't there. They are. Taxing experiences, hard experiences, difficult people, challenging situations. You need a certain kaushalam, a certain dexterity, learning to be able to handle some of these difficult situations. But even in all of that learning and all of that dexterity in handling the situations, your mind is not engaged in it in the same way that it was before. It's not saying, oh, if I could just handle this better, I would become full. We'll say if I could handle this better, it wouldn't be such a stressful situation. Right? And that is true. That's kaushalam. That's learning, you know, how to handle situations gracefully, objectively, in the best way possible to neutralize the painfulness of the situation or the adversity in the situation. That's all kaushalam. That's skill. But how much is my ananda at stake? Where is my mind in all of that? For jnani, the mind is home, and then negotiating the prarabdha karma. And when the prarabdha karma is positive and giving all kinds of little lila bogas, all of these little enjoyments, then those are being enjoyed. But I'm not asking them to be other than what they are. And I'm not asking the dukkha situations be other than what they are either. I'm not saying you have to change in order to make me happy. I'm saying this is a difficult situation. How can I handle it? I'm not saying you shouldn't be there. That's like saying that's this logic. It shouldn't be there. It's kind of this logic. If God is good, If God is really good, this difficult situation shouldn't exist. If God loves me, so this is Vidya's question on the, so I'm answering it now, Vidya. Okay. If God loves me, if God is a benign God, a good God, then if he were good, he shouldn't have made difficult situations. And if he really loved me, now that I'm in a difficult situation, he should come and rescue me. Right?
Yeah.
If he loved me, he would come and rescue me. Just like, I can say that about my parents. You know, if my parents really loved me, they would come and rescue me. If my parents, if my father cared about me, then certainly he wouldn't let me be drowning in this situation. He would come and save me. You know? So, does my father love me more than Bhagawan? You know? Why doesn't Bhagawan just come and make everything all right for me? So, that's an interesting idea. You know, that is a strange logic. That's the type of logic. It's this type of logic. I'll just divert here just for a minute. Is that God is a man in heaven who decided to create this creation in a particular way. Right? God is a man in heaven. Of course, Swamiji will really make fun of that because then, who created the heaven? But let's just say, God is a being, an omniscient being sitting in heaven who has made a decision to fashion this creation, to create it. You know? Now, if God is sitting there in heaven as an omniscient, all-powerful being, making a decision to create this, and that God, this omniscient, all-powerful being, is benign, is loving, is a good person, is a good God, then the creation that he would fashion would be pleasurable. It would just be full of love and goodness and well-being. And all beings would be happy. There wouldn't be no death, you know, there would be no tragedy, because a good God wouldn't create it that way. Right? But that's not the situation. So God, then, is a sadist. He's a sadist because he, even what he does, look at how mean he is.
Fickle, anyway.
Fickle? But he's a sadist because he gives you some enjoyment and then always takes it away. He gives you a little enjoyment, takes it away. He gives you a wonderful situation, kills your partner. Horrible, horrible, horrible things Bhagawan does. The one who created this. How can you account for that? You can't. You're looking at a little man in heaven, a big man in heaven, who has made a decision. We would never say Bhagawan has made any kind of decision. It's not that Bhagawan was there before the creation. You see what I mean? It's not like Bhagawan, let's look at it this way. Step back a minute. If we think Brahman, that which is the reality, conscious being, is free from time, free from change. There is no prior condition. There's no duality. There's no decision. Right? For Brahman, there is no decision because there's no time, no prior condition, no duality. No decision, no becoming, no thinking. I think I'll be this way. There's not even any thinking. There's just pure conscious being. No decision. Maya. Maya, which itself has no intrinsic being apart from Brahman, right? Beginningless. Beginningless. Projecting, resolving. Projecting, resolving. From beginningless time. No decision. Beginningless. Brahman, no decision, timeless. Maya, no decision, beginningless. Nobody's saying, let me be this way. Rather, it is, I am this way. Rather, this is the reality. This creation, which is an infinite manifestation of knowledge, is what it is, full of all duality, full of change, full of birth and death. What is change is birth and death. Any moment of change is birth and death. This creation is a manifestation of birth and death. Right? And every level, every moment is a birth and a death. It's a death of the prior moment, it's a birth of the new moment. And that birth and death is infinitely divisible. We see birth and death in the smallest things, in the biggest things, in short, in a small scale, in a big scale. There's nothing but continual birth and death, continual change. And the whole thing is mitya. If you go into this infinite manifestation of knowledge, you cannot find any type of substance here at all, other than satyam, other than Brahman. Right? Because every single thing in this creation breaks down into smaller things and smaller things and smaller things. It's all nama rupa. It's all name and form. Right? The Swamiji will go on and on. It's a name within a name within a name within a name within a name. Like this is one name, lamp. But within this lamp, you know, there's a pole and a base and wire and tungsten and light. Names within names within names within names within names. There is no such thing. And so when we look at Bhagavan, what do we see? It is not that there is a creator who made a decision. We say this creation is Ishvara because it's a conscious being, which is Brahman, which is the self, which is my being. And this is this universe of duality is an infinite expression of knowledge, which means that this entire infinite creation is known. It's an infinite, like an infinite mind. The whole Maya Upadhi is like an infinite mind, in the sense that the whole thing is, when you say manifest knowledge, the whole thing is known. Because it's a conscious being, that's why Bhagavan, right? But Bhagavan not as somebody who has come from somewhere else, as a little man somewhere, standing in an already created something or other, deciding how to create the creation. And so, when that's the case, when that's the case, there's no judgment for somebody who understands that. There's no judgment on this dukkha situation shouldn't be there, or this sukha shouldn't be there, or that the polar opposites shouldn't exist. The polar opposites shouldn't exist. The polar opposites are the very nature of the creation. Right? It's not a question of existing or not existing, or that tragedy shouldn't exist because change exists. If change exists, tragedy exists. Right? Because something that you want will no longer be there. Something that you consider to be sacred, even, and the most dear, will crumble and die in time. You know? Some things will crumble and die over the ages. Some things will crumble and die over your lifespan. You know? But they will all crumble and die and be destroyed. That's the very nature of the creation. Moksha is not finding a solution to the vagaries of the creation. Moksha is recognizing that there is, my being is free of that. My being, the ananda, the sat-chit ananda, is totally free, is the very swarupa of all of this. It is not subject to it. Right? And that this, in fact, is a manifestation of infinite knowledge, right? Which is my being, which is my being. That's the freedom. The freedom isn't the freedom of jivatvam within this creation. There is no freedom. There is no ananda for the jiva. Right? If the jiva is there searching for ananda in the creation, like a dream character in the dream, there will only be glimpses, little leshas of ananda. because of your attempts, successful attempts at creating a Shantavritti, you get these little leshas, these leshas mean little glimpses of ananda, and then you keep searching around for more, as though you're collecting the ananda, but it's very elusive. That's all the samsari gets. Yeah? And then looks around and makes all kinds of judgments on the world, trying to make sense of the whole thing, trying to understand how Bhagavan could do all of this. You know, that's why all of this all has to be sorted out. When it's sorted out, you don't expect the creation to be or Ishwar to be other than what Ishwar is. In fact, you go on discovering what Ishwar is. Because this is what Ishwar is. You go on discovering the reality, and you're free to do that because you've discovered your own freedom. You've discovered the mityatva of this, and you've discovered your own freedom. And in discovering of your own freedom, you can appreciate Ishwar. You go on understanding Ishwar. And you go on understanding, infinitely understanding Ishwar. So that becomes kind of the beautiful, beautiful ride. So the jnani who understands this, for that person, that these lila bogas, all of the little enjoyments that are given, they are considered to be enough. Okay, let's stop there. Is it pretty good?
Yeah.
Take a minute. My bills are active tonight. Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamadachate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.